10, public comment. This is an opportunity for the public to comment on items that are not otherwise on the agenda. Yes, sir.
My name is George Bott. Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner and Commission members.
Afternoon.
I'm here referring to our application for a community pier dated January 4th of this year. It's application number 12-0018. You probably don't have all that material before you. We heard at our hearing on the 25th of September when only about half of you were here. But the decision at that time we felt left us a little short. I'm the authorized applicant. I'm unpaid. I represent the Yankee Point Racing and Cruising Club, which I am a principal of. And we have the landowner with us this afternoon, Mr. Anker Madsen. So all parties are present. The decision, our request was for a, if I may, can I show you a picture?
Sure.
Most of it's on here. Our request was for a pier that extended 62 feet from mean low water and an L head of 50 feet. And when I drew this picture last December, that's what we thought how we would use this facility. We are principally a club of sailboaters. I wasn't sure that was clear. The staff when we came before you. We did make the point that this is a temporary arrangement. We typically race on Wednesday nights in the spring and in the fall. This is a temporary tie-up. We come up to the clubhouse and have a potluck dinner, then the boats go home. I made the point that in actual practice, now that we have a year, this is a brand new facility, the building. We've only been in it 1 year. In actual practice, probably only three boats are ever going to tie up to this pier because of the nature of where our folks live. We're in Lancaster County on Meyer Creek, which is a nice creek off of the Coratomin River, off of the Rappahannock River. Again, we are principally a sailing club. So our request was 70 feet for a total pier. 8 feet of that was on the land going over the existing riprap, 62 feet from mean low water, and again, 50 feet across. Now, just one more picture, if I may. This is our setting. Our clubhouse is buried in the trees here. I'm going to zoom in a little bit. This is the picture that Jay Woodard on your staff took this spring. It's a pretty nice picture, too. Really wanted to be up there with him. Barely make out these PVC stakes. Those are what Jay asked us to put in the water to indicate where that pier was going to go. It's not out of line with the other piers in this portion of the creek, as you can see. This existing pier is about 106 feet. This one's about 106 feet. This one that's partially submerged is over that length. This is a floating, our neighbor, a floating pier section 40 feet with a 40-foot extension to get to it. So our pier right in here, it would not have been out of character for this this location. What the commission decided on the 25th of December was, they allowed 50 feet from mean low water instead of the 62 we requested, based largely on some errors, and they were my errors, and I apologize for them. I indicated some water depths that were questionable on my original drawing. We met with the staff on the 1st of October, I believe, and they agreed to come out and do a water depth study, which we did on the 18th of October, I believe. So we verified all the depths, but what this gives us is 4 feet of mean low water instead of the 5 feet that we were looking for. 4 feet of mean low water is not very usable for sailboaters. They also requested that we provide this drawing, submit this drawing to you all as part of the draft permit process. Once they receive that, they would calculate some royalties because that we are a community pier, not a private pier. That's the difference from Lancaster County. They consider us a private pier. And they say they would have approved our former request. Incidentally, the Army Corps of Engineers gave their approval to our prior request, as did the Virginia Department of Health, provided we had no more than 10 boats there at any one time on a temporary basis, so as not to impact the water quality. Virginia Department of the DEQ approved that they wanted a pump-out agreement for the nearby marina. We have two pump-out agreements. So all the approvals, the Wetlands Board in Lancaster determined it was not a problem for them, so they gave their nod, and the Zoning Board said as soon as you all are done, we pay the fee, they'll approve this, the prior pier. So what we're faced with, based on your prior decision, and what we're asking for today is you reconsider this, the difference of 12 feet. We would never raft up in this configuration. It wouldn't be safe for us to do that. And when you look at the numbers, 50 feet from mean low water to the head of the L, about 10 foot per boat, that's according to Mr. Ken Null, one of the owners of the Yankee Point sailboat marina, an original objector, but he and his wife have withdrawn their objections. He says, figure 10 foot per boat, George. So I did. So that's 10, 50 plus 10, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 feet would be out into Meyer Creek. That puts us about 35% of the way across the creek based on the ruler function of Google Map. I think the staff has said about 300 feet. My measurements are a little bit less. So I'm not sure that wouldn't put us in trouble with the Army Corps of Engineers. When I talked to them in the past, Mr. Adrian Jennings and then Mr. Goodwin, I do recall he said anything 25% or less not to impede navigation was kind of what they were looking at for their cutoff point. So my point this afternoon is that this is really not a workable design for us. If we were ever to build this section, we wouldn't invest in anything like this because we couldn't really, our sailboaters couldn't use it. And we're going to reconsider or modify the December 25th decision to give us that extra 12 feet that we asked for. And if staff is still concerned about the number of boats, even though the Department of Health has given us, they said 10 or less is not a problem for the water quality on the creek. One of their concerns was we would possibly tie up more than that, although we could anchor out any number, apparently. They're still concerned about the number of boats. We'd take the 12 feet off of this end and abbreviate the L head as a compromise.
Are you expecting the commission to make some decision here today?
I don't know. When I asked Mr. Wilkinson that the commission, what's the procedure for reviewing the decision?
We normally don't make decisions during public comment period simply because the public hasn't been informed that this is an agenda item that's even coming before us.
But he said, come on down today, say your piece during the public hearing, and
that's you all. Mr. Watkinson, what's the normal procedure here?
So I think they came, wanted to talk to us about having the commission reconsider your decision. You had made the decision on the September meeting, And with that decision in place, the code requires that they have to wait a year before they can reapply a modified form to come back or reapply with a new application to build something different than what the commission permitted. So the only option basically for them to have you reconsider it was to come back at the very next meeting and just ask if you would be willing to reconsider that decision under, I guess it would be Robert's Rules. I'm not a Robert's Rules expert, but basically coming back at the next meeting, you just kind of continue what you had done and reconsider the matter. And I would suggest that would probably need to be at a subsequent meeting rather than today because other folks might be involved.
Sure.
So it's just a matter of what the commission wants to do. If you take no action at all, the commission's decision stands. If you want to rehear it, I guess it would be a matter of putting some parameters on that and how you want to conduct that meeting.
I have a question for Tony. Tony, does any of the information that you've seen today change staff's recommendation?
No. We had looked at this in terms of somehow trying to make it somewhat self-limiting in terms of how you could tie boats up there. We thought that if we pulled it back some, that you wouldn't raft up with so many on the outside and you would not tie up with too many boats. And so we wanted to make it somewhat self-regulating. And so that was the rationale for the pulling it back to some extent. And that was what we felt like we achieved. They have come forward now and suggested that many of their boats draw that or more, and as a result, they can't get that many boats there. I don't think we ever intended to permit something that would conceivably moor every boat that might be in their club because it could be, some large boats. We just don't know. And so that's where it stands with us. We did agree to go out and conduct the follow-up bathymetric survey just to kind of confirm some numbers because there seemed to be some confusion when they met with us because we thought, well, maybe you're at 5 feet of water at 50 feet. And as it turns out, where the stobs were placed at 54 feet from mean low water, those white PVC mm-hmm. pipes you saw on the line, I think you have 4.5 feet of depth at those stobs. We pulled it back, I believe, if my staff can correct me because they went out there and did it, to 4 feet back from where those stops were is the commission authorized at 50 feet from mean low water. So, I mean, is that correct, Jay? Or Jay and Ben went out there and...
Yeah, we went out and at the time of low tide on October 18th to verify what the depths were with members of the Racing and Cruising Club. And 70 feet that they asked for was something we were looking at it. We were trying to find what it is at 50 feet channel of mean low water, which is what the commission authorized. And again, Tony's right. Our recommendation was to pull it back. The drawings that were submitted in the application showed some boats inboard of the L. And we wanted to make sure that we were self-regulating, limiting the amount of boats that could be at here because of the health department's concerns that could cause an additional closure of shellfish grounds. So, in fact, we went out at low tide to where their stobs were, which turned out to be 54 feet channel of low water, might have been 70 feet from somewhere on the upland, as their contractor or whoever it was did the initial measurements, set the stobs, and we found 4.5 feet of water. And we also found that the L that was put in wasn't really a 90 degree, it kind of swung in a little bit. So when you, in fact, swing that L out, which would be the far left-hand side on the drawing, you probably have somewhat more than 4.5 feet of water. They indicate they need 5 feet of water. That really wasn't represented to us in the application originally, that 5 feet is what we have to have. It was information that the commission members that were here saw, and that's what we based our recommendation on.
Any other questions, Mr. Roberts?
Just to follow up, so were the depth contours that you found on site, I mean, it sounds like there's a little bit of a discrepancy right now between where you indicated that you took the depths, that is within 4 feet of the area originally staked, versus, it sounds like they're suggesting, the applicant's saying there's a 12-foot discrepancy between what the commission approved versus what they requested, and it sounds like there's a 4-foot discrepancy. Can you resolve that?
I'm going to defer to Chief Surveyor.
Yeah, I'll just ask if the results were significantly different from the set of facts that we were presented with, because this was just one of many considerations that we discussed.
I think that the depths that were represented by the information in the application were not accurate. I think there's actually more water at the depths.
I have a drawing that may clarify this.
All
right. I explain this so you can understand it. This is the alignment coming out from the shoreline. Can't really, it's pretty faint, but this is the approximate mean low water line. This line running along here. Hard to see in this picture.
Cassie, can you get the lights, please?
So what we did when we went out there is we went out to get depths on what they state, their alignment. There's two white pipes that you saw in the previous photograph. Basically, in this alignment between this 4.5 depth and this 4.3 depth. So that's the alignment that they state. That they said that was acceptable in their application. That's the way I interpret it. And that's the depth. With their own alignment, the depth is between 4.3 and 4.6 feet. So there's two issues here. To get to 5 feet, they need to go about 63 feet from mean low water or from the edge of the rocks up here, which is what they want, I think, but that's not what was staked in the field, and the drawings were never very clear as to exactly what that length was supposed to be. The other thing that Jay just mentioned is that if you were to draw a line this way and then this way, it's not 90 degrees. Which is the way their drawing was, and which we would assume almost all L's are usually built, is on a 90-degree angle. So if you actually turn 90 degrees here, the alignment would come more out like this, which would get you, at this end at least, almost 5 feet. Because it's actually, this line is skewed back towards the shoreline slightly. And yeah, it does sort of follow the shoreline alignment, but it's not perpendicular to the main stem. So, I don't know what the commission wants to do, but these are just the facts of what we found. We got the depths of what they staked. We also went out to actually find out where was 5 feet, because that's what we believe they wanted. And to get a 5 foot alignment that's basically perpendicular, the stem would have to come out to about 63 or 64 feet and run about that same general distance off being low water. So that's the difference between what was staked at about 54 feet. Another 10 foot would get them 5 feet. What we approved was about 4 feet back of this staked alignment, 50 feet.
So did the commission approve the something that's less than a 90 degree angle, or did they approve the 90 degree angle?
Well, the drawing, I would say the drawing depicted it as a 90 degree angle. But we went out there and surveyed, the way they marked it with their two stakes depicting the L was not really.
But the commission didn't approve the stakes in the water. They approved the permit drawing.
Right.
So that puts
it. Was if they built what the commission approved, it would come out here and then go more slightly. It would get away from these stakes offshore slightly as it went. It would end up coming somewhere out in here, which would still get you somewhere between 4.3 and 5 feet. I don't know exactly. I don't have a reading right there at 5 feet, but you can see 5 foot is pretty consistent. So I just want you to understand what we did and what the drawing shows.
Any questions from the members? Yes, sir. Mr. Plumley.
My My recollection of that meeting was that we were trying to get them to a depth of 5 feet. That's what our discussion was. Is that? I don't have that application right here, and I can't tell you from my memory if that's
right. Well,
exactly.
I will read you the staff recommendation, which is what the commission adopted, I believe, and I can double check. Accordingly, after considering all the factors in 28.2.12.05, staff recommends approval of the project, provided it is scaled back such that the pier extends no more than 50 feet total channelward of mean low water. This would allow the pier to reach the -4 foot mean low water contour. Given the existing depth, staff believes this would reduce the likelihood of vessels mooring inboard of the L head and thereby limit the number of vessels at the pier to those that could raft to each other on the outboard side of the pier head. While this would not eliminate the potential impacts resulting from additional vessels in the upper part of the... So it was -4 feet.
Okay.
And that was an attempt to reach a compromise between what they had proposed, and I misspoke earlier, Mr. Robbins, the depths we found were less than what their drawing showed. Their drawing showed 5.5 feet, where they only have 4.5 feet. So that's why we went back, not why, but we went back out and verified their depths were not accurately represented to us. And I used their drawings and their information in coming up with the staff used those drawings to come up with the recommendation, but it was a 4 foot contour at the end of the pier, such that as you raft it out, you would get more, and the shallower draft boats would raft inboard, and the deeper draft boats would raft outboard of that.
But that was with the understanding that they were looking for four foot draft.
Well, again, that was going off of their drawing that showed some of their vessels, in fact, would be able to moor in less than 5 feet of water. And for what it's worth, I don't know if I can present this.
I have it there.
Okay, if you want to.
They had boats depicted on the inboard side of the L.
That's what I recall, too.
And we were just attempting to come somewhat limit that and just have more on the outboard side and limit the amount of
This is the drawing that was part of the commission's packet. And part of the application is actually revised information or additional information that I had asked when I came to find out that this was going to be for rafting of vessels, not just two vessels, but for multiple vessels. I wanted to see what that might look like. And as you go out, it says 70 feet. Well, that's total length. Some of that above mean low water. And the 4 foot contour is here. And he's got a vessel between 4 and 5 in this area, four vessels inboard of the 5 foot contour, giving the depths here. It doesn't really show draft, but relatively small sailboats, and that's mean low water. You know, there's going to be more water than that, generally speaking. But
that is an error that I made, and I regret that error. It doesn't jive with our pier builders' water depth contours, nor does it jive with the joint study we did with your staff. What I tried to do was add more information and superimpose the water contours.
Could you come up to the mic, sir?
I tried to add additional information and I screwed it up.
So what are you asking the commission to do here today?
If you ignore these, I'm asking the commission to grant us the additional 12 feet to get us to 5 feet of mean low water, which sailboaters need.
Mr. Plummer.
Well, sitting on the board at that meeting, I mean, I don't necessarily want them to build a pier they can't use. And I don't think any of us did. We were trying to limit it so that a lot of the objections that were coming around in that hearing. And one question I do have, if I may ask this gentleman, did you resolve the dispute with the marina that came to
Yes, sir. We have it in writing, and we sent that down with our letter on the 17th of October to the chairman.
And you have a pump-out agreement with them as well?
And now we do with them as well.
And that had a lot to do with this argument over the number of vessels that could be moored there. So I don't think we want there to be this pier that cannot be used, and I don't know if the other members who were present feel the same. I would consider favorably a request to put this on the next hearing for our consideration. I would go along with a motion along those lines, or make a motion if I'm permitted. I don't know if I'm permitted to make a motion in the public hearing.
Yeah, I think you are. Sure.
Well, I would then move that we place this for reconsideration in our next available public hearing to modify, potentially modify them.
Is there time to put that on the December agenda, Tony?
I mean,
does it have to be re-advertised?
I would think it would.
Yeah, I think it would. Just our attorney says.
Re-advertised, I would suggest that this, that the 19th, the next hearing on December 10th, that really is not enough time to get everything.
You're probably looking at the January meeting.
Probably, but it need to be the January meeting if we were inclined to take that approach.
All right. With that understanding, is there a second to the motion to hear this again at the January meeting?
I made the motion.
I don't hear a second.
Second.
Second from Mr. Sessoms. Comments on the motion? I wasn't here at the meeting, so I'm going to stay out of this one, but I, just as long as everybody understands, I don't think we can make a decision here today to change the permit.
This is not a motion to modify the permit. It's a motion simply to replace it for hearing at the next possible hearing.
With all parties notified.
Right.
Maybe that should be just reconsider the decision at the...
To reconsider the previous decision.
Okay.
You're not really considering a new application.
Right.
Because they would be barred from submitting that for a year.
Right. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Jack. I'm not opposed to reconsidering the question. You know, the applicant has come before us with a different understanding of the water depths at the site. That is a relative consideration or a relevant consideration. I think it'd be appropriate to hear it, provided that it's adequately noticed, because there were concerns also stated by members of the community, and giving public notice and having the opportunity to have that hearing would be, I think, in order. I would note, though, that the letter we have from the applicant indicates that they did not receive a full and fair hearing at the September meeting, and I just point out I don't think the record supports that notion. In fact, we had essentially 2 hours of testimony. We heard from an extensive list of witnesses from the applicant. We heard from those in opposition. We heard a question from or a request from the applicant to continue the matter, and the board passed on that. But now we're presented with some additional information that, in fact, the water depths that were presented in the original application may not be accurate. So to hear it based on that fact, I think, is acceptable.
Any other comments?
Well, I would agree with Mr. Robbins that we've certainly had a full and complete hearing before. If anything, it was excessive. And I'm not persuaded that we necessarily need to talk about it again. But
all right, well, let me ask, is there any objection to the motion to carrying it or to reconsidering this matter at the January meeting?
I object to it.
One objection. Any others? Two? Let's vote officially then. All those in favor of the motion to reconsider the January meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
No.
We have 3 no votes. 5-3.
Okay.
Fox, Tankard, and Palmer. Thank you. You'll get your reconsideration in January. Any further public comment at this time? Yes, sir.
I may vote against him again, though.
Yeah.
My name's Mark Bender. I'm the Eastern Shore. I'm a commercial fisherman. Good day to all of y'all. Thank you for letting me vent. But I got a couple questions I'm a pine netter. Due to the recent storm, I got wiped out again in the last couple of years. I talked to you on the phone about whether the commission would make some kind of regulation that we wouldn't have to fish our pine nets next year due to the storm. And I was just wondering if anybody had given it any thought.
We've given that issue a lot of thought in recent years with all the storms we've had. And, Mr. O'Reilly, the current regulation requires you to fish only once every 2 years, correct?
Yes, 2 years, and that started in 2009. And so the first time that was a two-year period was by 2011. And so then anyone, for example, Mr. Bender was just licensed for a net recently within the last few months. So that would have to be from 2012 or 2013, by December 31st, 2013. That net would have to be fished.
Yes, I only fished one of the ones that I just recently got. So two of those would have to be fished next year. And of course, I mean, I got flattened. I mean, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I think this has a long history. This started with sea turtles. And at that time, there was a waiver of having to set and fish. And then later on, it was a situation of Hurricane Isabel and then Tropical Storm Ernesto. And then the Finfish Management Advisory Committee met in 2009 and decided the way to address this was to have a two-year period to allow the fishermen to set and fish. So that's the history behind all that.
What I would suggest on this is that that staff arrange a meeting with some of the pound netters, particularly on the Eastern Shore, who were, I know, affected by Hurricane Sandy, and see what the industry-wide needs are before we take off down a road to address one person's concerns. Let's make sure we understand what everyone's situation is and bring back a recommendation to the commission on how to proceed. Any objection to that, Mr. Tanker?
Let me just make sure I understood. Mr. Bender, you didn't fish your net this year then?
I only fished one of the recent three that I got, and the other two I was planning on fishing next year. But I had three and part of another one left in from croaker fishing. And when the storm hit, they went with the storm. I mean, I lost net, poles, you know.
So you're saying you don't have the financial resources to reset those next year?
I just got done paying for the previous storm. Paint from the following year and whatever, and now I'm right back in the same hole again. It's really hard. And I'm under the pressure to either put these things in or lose them. I doubt that I could possibly get them all in. I mean, I don't have to get them all in, but I have to put certain ones in because they're the ones that make me my money. And, then I got these other ones that I just got. And I got to replace net, poles.
Okay.
Well, Commissioner, to add, I think staff has found that there are probably, if I recall, about eight fishermen in the same situation. Some lost just some poles, some lost entire structures. So we will survey industry-wide and then come back to the commission.
Right. Come back in January. Does that meet your needs?
Well, one of them, yeah. And as long as we're talking about pine nets, am I under the understanding that the commission is considering changing the definition of an inshore pine net from an offshore pine net? Right now, it's within 10 feet of the mean low water mark.
That the commission is in the process of doing that? No. No, we're not.
Didn't I ask you one time about that?
The National Marine Fisheries Service is considering making changes, but it's probably going to be several months before. You want to come up and explain the changes? Thank you, Lewis.
I didn't want to just jump up. The only reason I'm asking this is I've lost my net, and we have to order the rope for these turtle waders from New Bedford, and it takes 3 or 4 months to get this rope. If I don't start now doing something like this, then I'll
realize the process within the protected resources is a very long and arduous one, and they essentially went out of business after that oil spill in the Gulf 2 years ago. I mean, so the plan that they were going to be pushing along
this is a federal
an update
plan.
Over a year ago now is coming on track, and when I last spoke with Stacy, it's down in Miami, and they're the ones that coordinated it. she thought we might get together, and I'm a member of the take reduction team, sometime later this winter, in 2013. So, and that is one of the items they are considering. I mean, that was.
But
one
if
of
they proceeded with that, how soon would those provisions be part of federal law?
They can take
at least a year, wouldn't you think?
Remember when the commission last met on the pound nets and we required leaders in the lower bay? We thought NHTSA was going to push that through, you know, within 6 months,
and that's
been over 2 years here. Well, the change would involve how the inshore nets are defined, exactly what Mr. Bender said. In the past, it had been a certain distance from mean low water. Well, in areas where it's flat, that could put them pretty far out. Now the change would be at the kingpin, which is the head of the net, come up with some minimum depth. So if the shoreline was steep, you know, if it's 10 feet or 8 feet or whatever that depth is, it wouldn't matter how far they are from shore. And it will change the how which nets are going to be considered inshore nets, which are exempt from the leader requirements currently.
Thank you.
So, yes, it could.
See, I have one trap that's in the same depth of water that every inshore fire net is on the eastern shore. Only except it sits 1,200 feet off the beach. You know, the inshore part is leaving. But yeah, it's only the same depth of water. That would feel terrible.
Sounds to me like you need to get with Lewis when he attends these federal meetings to make your type of situation
and it's
available to them.
Not only turtles, because our group is actually the bottlenose dolphin group. In this case, it was additional concerns about the bottlenose dolphin themselves, that the net's in deep enough water that they're using it as a fish, their own fishing device, and inadvertently getting tangled up in the leader.
Thank you.
And the two plans are intertwined, which is one reason why it's taken so long. They had to coordinate the Miami bottlenose dolphin with the Northeast turtle folks.
Mr. Bender, anything else?
Sure.
All right.
I got a question about y'all got a law on the books conch pots and the bait that you're allowed to put in there. The law says I'm allowed to put one half of a female or two halves of a male. Well, when y'all made that law, horseshoe crabs were probably 75 cents a piece. I didn't mind going to my pod and taking a perfectly good piece of bait out, throwing it overboard. But now they're $3.50 a piece. So if I fish if good Lord lets me go out every other day or whatever, and I go to my pod, and there's a perfectly good piece of bait in there, but yet I just want to add a small piece to it. I don't like to just put the same bait back in there. You know, I'd like to just add a little piece to it and throw it back overboard. But if I do that, then I'm breaking the law. And if I could just add a little bit of bait to my pot and not throw a perfectly good piece of bait away, then it would probably save me $200 or $300 a day that I could put in my pocket. I mean, you know, it doesn't make sense. I know we're trying to conserve horseshoe crabs, but it don't make sense to throw a perfectly good piece of bait away and then put another piece in it.
So you're saying when you put that extra piece in there, you're over the half a crab limit, or?
I asked Mr. Bruce about this, and he said something about the officers were concerned about how they would, you know, look at if there's a bunch of bait in there, they wouldn't be able to just say, well, there's one half of a female in there. Or if they find three or four pieces in there, they might be confused. But trust me, at $3.50 a piece, we're not going to put no more bait in there that we have to. You know, it's hard on us. I mean, we get bait in bags now that's got 10 baits in a bag, even though there might be two males in a bag for one female, but they're supposed to be $35 for one bag of crabs. Well, we get out there, we get a machete out, or axe or whatever, and we chop these things into pieces that's hard to distinguish anyway. I mean, we're not putting a whole lot of bait in there. We might put a third of a female, maybe a half of a male instead of two halves or whatever. You know, we've got bait bags nowadays. We've got bait boxes in our pots. We don't have to put a lot of bait in there. But we would like to be able to just add a little piece to it without breaking the law.
Anybody have a solution to that one?
Well, I was going to ask Mr. Bender, what would you like to see is
I would like to just see that half and whatever just done away with. I mean, I don't see what good it does. We don't put that much bait in them anyway anymore. I mean, unless you get on something that's on the bottom, like fleas or something, that eat your bait up. I mean, we've got bait bags wrapped around them. We've got bait boxes, and the conchs themselves don't really eat the bait. I mean, most of the time, the bait's still left in the pot when you get back there. But we would just like to add a little small fresh piece to it, to, you know.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know a little bit about this, and I guess, you know, there is another change within the industry where some of the boats have converted to choppers to chop up the bait into small pieces, and in order to better conserve the use of the crab. So they're using that in combination with an appropriately sized mesh for the bait bag. And that was in response to last year's result where the industry ran out of bait, and it forced some innovation on the part of the fishery, which I think is a very good thing. In terms of conserving the use of the crab, but that is an operational change within the fishery, so it may be appropriate to review this somehow at the staff level, talking to industry, because that, you know, getting to the point of using less bait was the desired conservation objective. If somebody's chopped up bait into small pieces, I don't know how you'd frankly go about enforcing the existing regulation, but it is a positive development. So it's probably one that deserves some discussion. I don't think we're going to solve it here today, but, you know.
Anyone object to that, to letting staff take a look at that? All right, that's how we'll proceed on that one. That was your last item, correct?
I guess September meeting, you weren't here?
Right.
And Mr. Robbins chaired the meeting. Mm-hmm. And usually I listen to the minutes on the meeting. Did I hear you say something about 2.5-inch coal rings? I must have drunk that one.
In the crab fishery?
In the crab pot.
No. I think there's been some discussion at the committee level where when we talked about conservation equivalency, and this related back to dredging, there was a suggestion that came from industry at one point in a committee meeting where we would consider a 2.5-inch coal ring to achieve some additional conservation in the crab pot fishery, but the committee never got behind that. I mean, there's never been any support for that other than to say that it was discussed at the committee level. It never got out of committee, and the commission has never entertained that consideration.
I would just say that if something like that was to happen, you might as well just cut the top out of your pot and just let them go to the breeze, or get those ones where you pull it up real quick and the crab's in there, because that's crab's this big out of them, too, and, you know. It's,
we understand. Then,
all right, I got one more. 14 on here says request for the public hearing about the horseshoe crabs.
Right.
I got something to say about that. Can I wait till then? Or?
You're going to have to wait till then. Yeah, we.
It's not a public hearing item, though.
Yeah, we'll probably hear from you next month.
I put my public comment about it. It won't take a second.
Perhaps.
My father's 83 years old. He holds an unlimited horseshoe crab permit.
Okay.
I had to redocument my vessel and sell my father half of my vessel to him for me to utilize my father's horseshoe crab permit. As it is right now, when my 83-year-old father dies, that permit's going to die with him. I don't think that's right, because after everybody dies, there won't be a... So that's
Mr. Grist has a solution for you.
Well, if Mark sticks around, he'll hear that we're going to be talking about transfers of this permit for the December meeting, and there is an industry meeting to be held on the 27th of this month. We'll also talk about this very same issue. So Mark's been heard by staff frequently on this. It is an issue we're taking up.
Good.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we're going to move on.